You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I'm not surprised the Bengals beat the Vikings, so I wouldn't put the Vikings in there, McLevin. My Bengals beating the Vikings.
Got it. They're out.
Okay, you going to put somebody else in there? Isn't this going to be Buffalo? They lost at home to Pittsburgh. Everybody's talking about Josh Allen and the Bills being a Super Bowl team.
Well, Green Bay, I think those are 1-2.
Yeah.
I don't think the Browns belong on there. I thought they looked pretty impressive.
I think it's how they lost, because they were the better team for three quarters, and then all of a sudden they gave Mahomes an opportunity, and he took advantage of that. Joe Burrow, the Bengals quarterback, led the Bengals to the win against the Vikings 20-27, threw for a couple of touchdowns, including one to his former teammate, Jamar Chase, as they pick up the victory in overtime. Congratulations, Joe. How do you feel today?
Good to start the season off with a win, especially the way we won. We, you know, faced some adversity and came out on top. That's something we weren't able to do last year, so it's good to get a win like that.
Take me into overtime. 4th and 1. You have the ball at your own 48. There's 39 seconds to go. In the third quarter, you had a 4th and 1. You ran the ball. What's the conversation like with that play call to keep the drive alive?
Yeah, we're going to put the ball in my hands. You know, I saw a look from the defense that, you know, I think opened up the play that we had. So we got to that play, and, you know, it was didn't work out the way we expected it to, but we got the job done.
Wait, but you go to the line of scrimmage. Is the play called going to be a running call?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
And then you see something, and then you realize that, hey, I got an option here, and I can hit my tight end.
Yeah, they put basically three D-line, or they put a D-lineman over the center and then two D-linemen in the A-gaps, and so I knew it was going to be tough to run the ball. So we just got to a pass and executed it.
How much fun is it to take me back to the play in the huddle. What is the play that you threw to Jamar for his first NFL touchdown?
Just double go Y shallow. Just tell Jamar to run as fast as you can. I'm going to throw it up to you.
Okay. So did you say, Jamar, just run as fast as you can, I'll throw it up to you?
That was understood.
Explain this whole, the college football to the NFL football, and Jamar was not able to pick it up. I mean, I understand it, but it sort of came out. I'd never heard it before from a wide receiver.
Well, I think Jamar's an honest guy, and he's been having some struggles, basically just in the preseason games. You know, he's been playing really well in practice, and, you know, the NFL football is different. I don't know how big of a part of this playing in the drops he was having in the preseason, but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to show up ready to play game one, and he sure did. You know, people were asking me what I think he was going to look like yesterday, and I told everyone, just don't worry about Jamar. All right, he's going to show up on game day and do his thing, and that's exactly what he did.
How much do you think of your offseason with your surgeries with your knee?
No, I've put in the work to not think about the knee at all. You know, I got rolled up, got hit on it yesterday, and, you know, it felt great. So that was exciting for me. You know, put that behind us, and we can move on.
What was the worst day for you?
Worst day in the rehab?
Yeah.
I mean, those first couple of days after surgery were pretty excruciating. You know, there was a lot of damage in there, a lot of trauma. And so those first couple of days after surgery, basically any kind of movement was excruciating pain. So that was not very fun. But we got out of that fairly quickly after about a week, and then it was smooth sailing.
Bears played the Rams last night. How much of that game did you watch, since your next game is against the Bears?
Yeah, I watched all of it. You know, they obviously have some really good players on defense. You know, the Rams played really well. They got some Rams are loaded. going to have to bring some of that next week. I'm excited to go into Chicago. I think that'll be a fun road game. And they're talented on defense. We're going to have to show up to play.
Is the game slowing down? College quarterbacks are, you know, relatively new quarterbacks in the NFL talk about usually year two, it starts to slow down a little bit. You're able to kind of see things differently. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, right before I got hurt last year, it was really starting to click for me and slowing down. And then I got hurt and wasn't able to really show that the last part of the season. So, you know, I felt really comfortable back there yesterday, and we had a great plan going in. Ran the ball well. Defense played great. I think it was a great team win.
What advice would you give a rookie quarterback?
Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You know, go out there and play your game. You know, if you see a throw, let it rip, and then, you know, talk about it later. But, you know, when I got in trouble was when I was indecisive and, you know, slow and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And when I just went out there and let it rip, you know, I played pretty well.
Are you on social media?
Yeah, I'm back on there. I'm not a big Twitter guy, but I'm on Instagram.
It's dangerous, Joe.
It is. It really is. That's why I'm not on Twitter, because, you know, Twitter, they can get to you. You know, every little thing you see. Instagram, you're kind of in your own little world. You don't have to look at all that stuff.
Were you on Twitter last year?
I mean, a little bit. Oh. Not too much, but Twitter, yeah, Twitter's not a very positive place.
How did they rough you up? What were some of the things that were said?
Oh, I mean, you hear it all. Bust, weak arm, terrible. I mean, all of the above. You hear it all on Twitter.
Instagram's a little more positive. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, I think everyone has a positive mindset on there.
Yeah. If you could change one rule in the NFL that you had in college, is there a rule that you would love to change?
No, that's a good question. I would like for there to be less TV timeouts.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like every series you're running out there and waiting for 4 minutes before you start to play. It really feels like, I don't know, it feels just like you take a long time to get out there and call the play.
What do you talk about when you're out there waiting for the game to start or continue, resume?
Well, you hear Zach in the headset, you know, going through his thought process on what play to call, and going through his thought process as far as, you know, what my job is on that play. And then he relays what he wants me to tell some of the guys in the huddle as far as what pertains to their jobs. And then also you just, you know, kind of have a little fun out there. Talk about whatever, you know, you don't want it to get too serious.
Did you want to talk about the LSU Tigers?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about the Tigers.
Did you watch the UCLA game?
I did, yeah.
Ouch.
I did.
Yeah.
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 That was a tough one. But, you know, I think they got a great coaching staff that'll get that right.
Yeah.
Seemed like the physicality was lacking a little bit. And if I know Coach O, that's not going to last very long.
Does Ohio State's loss affect you at all?
No, I haven't played with, you know, last year, I had some guys on the team that I played with, so I was rooting for them. But no, it doesn't affect me too much. I still talk to some of the coaches there, so I still have some relationships on the team, but I wouldn't say it affected me.
Well, it's great to talk to you. And I mean, you talked to Urban Meyer about giving Trevor Lawrence advice. Was that during the offseason?
Yeah. You know, I mean, Coach Meyer, stay in contact. You know, we're good friends now. And so, you know, we talk on and off, you know, every couple weeks. He just checks in. You know, he's a good guy, good coach. You know, I'm excited to play against him week four, though.
Wait, so you're friends with him now, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
But you weren't friends with him?
Well, I mean, he was my coach. You know, he was hard on me. But now that, you know, we've kind of got away from it for a while, you know, we're good friends. We talk a lot about a lot of different things, football, life, all that good stuff.
Does he make you laugh? Is he funny?
Yeah, he's hilarious in his own way.
Yeah, but I keep hearing that about Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, but I never see it.
Well, I don't think they want you to see it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, they're doing a good job of that, Joe.
Just, yeah.
Hey, congrats on the win. Good luck against the Bears. And, you know, maybe Justin Fields will be getting a little more airtime for the Bears with this game.
Yeah. You know, he's a good player. He was, you know, the three plays he got yesterday, he was exciting to watch. he's going to have a good future.
Thank you, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Yep, thanks, Dan.
That's Joe Burrow, Bengals quarterback. Last time we saw him was in Miami at the Super Bowl, came in. He was taller than we thought, looked a little more like the actor Vince Vaughn than we thought, and a little slighter than what we thought. A lot of these quarterbacks, like Matt Ryan, when we saw Matt Ryan at Pebble Beach, it's like, damn, he's every bit 6'5", 6'6". Quarterbacks look a whole lot bigger in person. Well, some do, because you see them being thrown around like ragdolls, and you're like, first time I met Dan Marino, I'm like, how's the defense throwing you around like that, dude? You're a big guy. Phil Simms, big guy. Carson Palmer, big guy. A lot of times you look at these, you see Big Ben, and he is big. Yes, McLovin.
How about Tom Brady? You put him in that list?
No. He's taller than you think, but not big. Josh Allen is taller than he looks and bigger than he looks. But you watch these defensive players, and they just throw them around. Yeah, Paul.
I went back and watched the Joe Burrow interview from when we were at the Super Bowl in Miami. Do you remember the first question we asked him? Because we were talking about how young he looked. You asked him if he shaves.
Oh.
He goes, I have shaved.
Oh.
I don't shave regularly. That's great. Yeah. We were talking about how young he looked.
Yeah. I remember the big deal was, did you want to be drafted by the Bengals? We're not going there anymore. Man, I'm hearing from my friends in Cincinnati. What are you trying to do? You're trying to sabotage? I'm going, I just want to know if he wants to be drafted. It's not that crazy. Like, people are so territorial, and I'm not. My job is to just say, hey, do you want to go there? Eli Manning did not want to go to the Chargers. John Elway did not want to go to the Colts. It's happened before. It's not like I go, man, he's gonna demand to be traded. It was just, I wanted to hear if he truly was embracing Cincinnati. The Bengals, wanting to go there. He's an Ohio guy. Although people think he grew up in Cincinnati, he grew up up north. I think around Ohio University. Yes, McLovin.
There's a lot of positive energy around the Bengals. They seem to be like buddies. I know that sounds really ridiculous, but everybody was sort of supportive of each other.
Yeah, it was 21-7, and then the Vikings came back, and then it was overtime, and I go, don't lose this game. No. You want to build off this, Ja'Marr Chase. Joe Mixon has quietly had a nice career. Very good all-purpose back. Now, I know what happened in college, and that'll stay with him the rest of his life. And he might not be able to be a star because of that. But Ja'Marr Chase looks good, the offensive line. And I remember that the Bengals, a lot of people thought, hey, take Penei Sewell. Get an offensive line for Joe Burrow. I'm all for that, protecting your quarterback. It helps when you have a wide receiver like Ja'Marr Chase. You got Joe Burrow in a game where Justin Jefferson is playing for the Vikings, and he was with you, and you got Ja'Marr Chase. Those are some nice luxuries that you have at LSU. Well, you did have at LSU. Yes, Paul.
Dan, your Bengals could have a good run this first half of the season at Chicago, at Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Green Bay, Detroit, then a little tougher Baltimore, but then Jets. First eight games.
Yeah. Yeah, McLovin.
I think they opened as 3-point underdogs.
Against the Bears?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised by that.
Well, the Bears are at home. I mean, you're going to usually if they probably look at that game as a toss-up. Oh, congratulations to Fritzy's Broncos.
That was a nice win.
Thank you, Todd. That's all you get.
That's all I get.
That's
a nice win. Four syllables.
Yeah. You got the Giants. You beat the Giants. Congratulations.
On the road in my life.
Yeah. And Teddy Bridgewater.
Not an easy place to play in Big Blue Land.
I don't know about that.
They're pretty loud there.
It's a whole lot easier when you're playing the Giants. You might go, boy, that's a tough place to win. Yeah, when the Giants were really good, it was a tough place to win.
They got a good defense. It's
interesting that, there aren't many places where you go and you go, boy, that's a tough place to play, and the team's not any good. Although that home stadium advantage for Kansas City, that to me, that played a large role, it felt like, in just the momentum shift. And once they sensed it, then you have the botched punt, and then you have Mahomes doing what Mahomes does. And Travis Kelce was great. Travis, I think, is going to join us Wednesday. I think so.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Todd. Yeah, Paul.
What'd you guys think of the Rams' new stadium? That's gorgeous, isn't it? It's very majestic.
There was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Seton brought this up. He said it's almost like they built it for almost like a TV set. You know, it's Hollywood, and you're building something that looks great for TV. And I thought that that was that kind of showed through. Yes.
Yeah, because if you look, it's not really that Coliseum-like setting, like, say, MetLife, right? That's more of a traditional-looking stadium. This thing, everything was like this sweeping, beautiful view, and you're like, how is there even a football game going on inside there? It just really looked great on screen.
And the uniforms look great. Matthew Stafford, you want to have a debut with the new team? Boy, that's the way to do it. Here's my first pass. And then Cooper Kupp down the middle, down the seam, and the Bears looked a little discombobulated. And then Andy Dalton throws the interception.
Tip pass.
Is Justin Fields going to start week two at home? Because I said I wouldn't start him on the road Sunday night against the Rams. But at home against the Bengals, yeah, I would. I'd give him a shot. But, you know, the coaches know. The coaches can see how a player progresses. Does he know the playbook? How is he in practice? How do his teammates respond? There's so much more that goes into it other than, hey, Andy Dalton's not our future, and we drafted Justin Fields. We've got to put him in there. He might not be ready, and you want to put somebody in when you believe he's ready, because you don't want to have one of those disastrous debuts. You want to have momentum going in. And, you know, Mac Jones yesterday, they didn't expand the playbook. It was pretty much dink and dunk. There wasn't anything that was truly dramatic, but he was very efficient. But he played like I thought he would play. I thought that they would utilize the tight ends. They would utilize the running backs out of the backfield. But, you know, the Dolphins in the red zone, you know, if you're going to force them to kick field goals, you can stay in the game. And, you know, that's what happened. Then you have the fumble. All it takes is that one play. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Joe Thomas, you can follow him on Twitter, at JoeThomas73, NFL Network analyst, former Browns All-Pro offensive tackle, now working for the NFL Network. Joe, thanks for joining us. If you're a Browns fan, how do you feel today?
I think you feel great, and they should feel great, because going into this season, everybody wanted to tell them about how great they were, and you always worry about, you know, stubbing your toe in that first game. I know they didn't win, but they beat Kansas City in that game if you watch it from start to finish. And it's just a matter for them now of just learning how to finish down the stretch. This is a team that turned the entire organization and franchise around when Kevin Stefanski got there. The mentality has completely changed. The culture has changed. Now just learning how to win down the stretch. But, I mean, having the Chiefs who – 2 years ago, they won the Super Bowl. Last year, they were in the Super Bowl. A lot of people thought that they probably could have won that Super Bowl. And going into their place in week one and really outplaying them, I don't think that that is anybody's something that anybody should be ashamed of if you're a Browns fan.
But we're waiting for a signature moment from Baker Mayfield. Is that fair to say we're still waiting for that moment where you go, okay, that's what elite quarterbacks do?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, last year against the Ravens, he had that moment. But unfortunately, Lamar Jackson was a little bit better down the stretch. And they weren't able to win the game. So you don't really think of Baker having that signature moment. But he's still such a young quarterback. If he continues to play the way he did yesterday, the rest of the season, he's going to get plenty of those moments in this season right now. He's ready for it.
What was more disappointing for the fan bases, the Bills losing at home to the Steelers or the Packers losing the way they lost to the Saints in Florida?
The Packers, obviously, because everybody's talking about the last dance for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, like, this is their moment. They're going to win the Super Bowl. Expectations are sky high. And to be able to go and just completely a turd against a team that really had so many questions going into this game. You know, how are they going to replace Drew Brees? How are they going to be able to focus on this game with the hurricane displacing so many of them and their family, playing the game in Jacksonville, and then coming out and stomping all over the Packers, really in a defensive effort. I know Jameis Winston had 5 touchdown passes, but it was that defense that completely stifled the Packers and turned Aaron Rodgers into a common looking quarterback. That was really impressive. And a lot of credit has to go to Sean Payton and the job he's done with getting that team ready, focusing through all the distractions and making Jameis Winston from a turnover machine to a touchdown machine.
But also, there does the defense usually start out ahead of offenses, in your opinion, and what you experienced when you played?
Yeah, they do, because they don't have as many things to learn. They don't have as many things to install. It's much more instinctual as far as just learning how to go out and tackle and run and hit. Like, there's a lot of plays on defense, don't get me wrong, but offense is so much more about detail, communication, installing new plays, reacting to what the defense is doing to you. So typically, development-wise, the defense is way ahead. But when you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who's been around forever, and they've been in this offense now several years under Matt LaFleur, I don't think that necessarily is true in this case. They should have been able to come out and they should have been firing on all cylinders. It's not like this is the first time that they've played in this offense. And it's not like this is Aaron Rodgers' 5th or 6th year in the NFL. I mean, he's seen everything that's out there. He's got an experienced offense. There's no excuse to have a clunker like they did on Sunday.
Is Chandler Jones a Hall of Famer?
I don't think he has Hall of Fame credentials yet. Like, if he retired tomorrow, but certainly the way he played in the game on Sunday, he's got Hall of Fame talent and he's building that Hall of Fame resume. To be an All-Pro, to be a Pro Bowler, you can do that in one season. To be a Hall of Famer, you got to do that over nearly almost a decade of football.
And so, but he's got 102 sacks right now.
I think certainly there's the number, right? Right. That's a big number. But without the longevity, I think he becomes one of those guys that you talk about, but I don't think gets in at this point. But certainly he's right there. I mean, a few more seasons like he's been having, and I think he definitely can be a Hall of Famer.
What's the most sacks you gave up in a game?
I don't think I've ever given up a sack, Dan. It was always the quarterback's fault, right? No, I remember there was a game where I gave up 2 sacks, like sort of in the middle part of my career against the Falcons. And I was really frustrated by it. But, you know, as an offensive lineman, we're always telling ourselves, well, you know, the quarterback was in the wrong spot. He held onto the ball too long. And so that really wasn't my fault. Yeah, they're going to give me the credit. I'll take the credit. Yeah, it was my fault. But you always got to talk your way out of it like a high school kid. Well, I was late for curfew, but, I hit a cat on the way home and so I had to find the owner of the cat. And then, you know, you always make those excuses in your head.
Did you ever get mad at a quarterback because he might have cost you a sack because he held on to the ball too long or didn't step up in the pocket?
Yes. I yelled in my head, and typically instead of yelling at him directly, because I know that's kind of unproductive, what I would do is I just wouldn't help him up. Like, you know, usually if you see the quarterback land on the ground, it's a lineman's culture to go right over, help your ball carrier up, help your quarterback up, especially if you gave up the sack.
Like, wait, what was the name of that quarterback?
I can't remember. I can't even remember all the quarterbacks that I played with that started with me. But
lot of quarterbacks in Cleveland.
A lot of quarterbacks back there. There was a lot of quarterbacks back there. But I definitely, instead of helping him up, I would just turn my head and walk right back to the huddle. That was his way of knowing that I was very displeased with what he did on that play.
What game surprised you the most yesterday?
It was the Packers, right? Because living in Wisconsin, I mean, everybody had high expectations. That was what the conversation was about the entire offseason, how this was their last dance. They were going to win the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers was super motivated. He finally, you know, kind of got a little bit what he wants, so he's a little bit more happy. But maybe what we want from an Aaron Rodgers is a pissed off Aaron Rodgers. Maybe that's what he needs to get the best out of himself and to get the best out of his teammates, because what we saw of Aaron Rodgers was not what I recognized as an Aaron Rodgers performance.
When you have a rookie quarterback, what's that like for the offensive lineman of knowing what your job is, or how does that job change when you have a rookie quarterback?
Well, it makes your job a lot harder because, like I mentioned, I don't think I've ever given up a sack because the quarterback was in the wrong spot on every single one of those sacks. But that's the issue with a rookie quarterback. And we saw it a little bit with Trevor Lawrence this weekend, right? They're either not in the right spot because they dropped too deep, their footwork wasn't right, Or they're holding onto the ball too long. They're not going through the progressions the right way. And so you deal with all those things as rookies because they got so much on their plate. The quarterback position has the most to learn out of any position in the NFL by far. And it's so much of it is decision-making, getting the football out on time. And so a lot of times when they're thinking about what's the coverage doing, what's the pressure, do I need to change the protection? They forget about some of the little details that, okay, maybe I'm supposed to take five steps and not seven. If I hit my seventh step, I need to step up and I need to hitch up because otherwise I'm going to be standing at 10 and a half yards and the line is blocking for a spot at 9 yards. And so as a lineman, it's the worst feeling in the world where your guy turns and runs upfield and you turn and you feel like you're running him by. And all of a sudden out of the corner of my left eye, I can see the quarterback and he's standing not where he's supposed to be. And I'm like, oh crap, I got to turn the jets on to try to push this guy past. But at that point, it's already too late. So it's just part of dealing with a rookie, a young quarterback, is dealing with those moments where, oh, he didn't do what he was supposed to, but that's sort of the cost of doing business with a rookie.
If you're blocking for Ben Roethlisberger or you're blocking for somebody who has some mobility, like the difference in, you know, because Buffalo didn't get to Ben Roethlisberger yesterday, and he's not moving, he's not running, outrunning anybody. You know, the different philosophy that you have when you have somebody who has some elusive moves there as opposed to a stationary.
Yeah, when you have a quarterback that's elusive, like a Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, those guys, Patrick Mahomes, you know, you can't have that internal clock where, okay, I know the ball's supposed to be thrown. I got to turn and run and chase the football and try to get downfield in case there's a fumble or in case I need to peel a guy off the pile. What you're doing much more now is you're reacting to whatever your defensive player is doing. It's a little bit like when you're playing defensive back in man coverage and you're following your guy, you're watching his eyes because you can't see the football. You can't see what's going on behind you. Same thing as an offensive tackle. I'm watching that defensive end and I'm cueing off of his eyes. As soon as his eyes go this way, boom, I got to chase him because there's a good chance that all of a sudden Russell Wilson has extended the play and he's running out of the pocket. And I got to do whatever I can by hook or by crook to get my head in front of this guy and get one last shove to be able to give Russell that half a second that he needs to go hit Tyler Lockett down the field for that big play. So it's much different than you got a Ben Roethlisberger. You got those older quarterbacks who are much more, this is where I'm going to be. They're going to be right where they're supposed to be. And once your guy turns and runs downfield, you know the ball has been delivered. It's not like Ben's scrambling back there trying to make plays with his feet.
When you have that college coach, successful coach who goes into the NFL, Urban Meyer, what's the wrong thing for that college coach to do once he gets to an NFL locker room?
The one wrong thing? I think we're seeing a lot of the wrong things and a lot of the difficulties from Urban. Honestly, I think the hardest thing for Urban Meyer is that he had no NFL experience. And so the hardest thing then is hiring your staff. And there were some whispers coming out this week already that there was a lot of friction between the guys that he brought in from college that he was comfortable with, that he had a relationship with, that he wasn't going to have to teach every single thing that he wanted to those guys and the guys that he brought in that had the NFL experience. Because it is a different culture in the NFL and in college. There is a lot of different concepts and schemes and how you want to run your practice, how you need to treat your players like a little bit more like professionals, like men, to get the most out of them. And so I think the learning curve is already really steep when you're a coach that spent most of the time in college and you make that transition to the pro game. We've seen it so many times, but it's even worse when you have no NFL experience because typically you're putting together a staff that has half of the guys that are like your guys and then half the guys that are NFL guys that you don't really know, but that have been recommended for you that you've hired without really having any relationship with. And there's going to be a lot of friction there. There's going to be friction between the guys that were college coaches that are trying to coach the NFL players like they're still in college, where it's more about trying to motivate them in a lot of different ways to get them to play hard. Whereas in the NFL, a lot of those guys are self-motivated and they're motivated by money. They're motivated by feeding their family. They're motivated because they could get cut at any moment. And so I think it's a lot more about teaching at the NFL game and versus in college. It's about motivating and developing and just teaching the values and the fundamentals of football. Hard work, toughness, being on time. That doesn't really fly as much in the NFL.
You can see Joe Thomas, NFL Network's NFL Game Day kickoff Thursday at 6 Eastern ahead of the Giants-Washington game on Thursday Night Football. Do you think Ron Rivera brings in Cam Newton?
That's a great question. I didn't hear what the injury situation to the big beard man is. I know he hurt his hip, but I'm not sure how long he's out. I still like Fitzpatrick with that team because that defense is so good. I thought Heinicke played pretty well yesterday. And at this point, it's difficult to bring in a quarterback, have them learn the entire offense and get on the same page with your pass catchers, unless you're going to bring in Cam and say, hey, use your legs. We want you to scramble and, you know, kind of change the offense a little bit more. It's more RPO type stuff, quarterback power, doing some of the things that he did in New England. Then maybe you think about it. But I think if they're going to keep the same offense and continue to just try to throw the football, then I don't think it's a great fit.
Good to talk to you as always, Joe. We'll be watching on Thursday night. Thank you, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
That's Joe Thomas, NFL Network analyst, former Browns All-Pro offensive tackle, and will end up in Canton in the Hall of Fame. Let's go around the room. Best and worst of the weekend. I'll start with Fritzy. Todd, best and worst of the weekend.
Best of the weekend. 18-year-old qualifier Emma Raducanu, want to make sure I pronounced that right, wins the U.S. Open, didn't lose even one set along the way. Emma, 19-year-old Leila Fernandez, showed great maturity and poise throughout. The way they handled the media and the fans, I thought that was pretty awesome. Worst of the weekend, I'm giving it to Western Carolina and Alabama State. Why, you ask? The Catamounts lose to the Sooners 76-0. The Hornets fall to Auburn 62-0. So if you're going to do the math at home, 138-0 combined. Come on now. Hope they got a nice payday to be humiliated in such fashion.
Nobody watched more tennis from the women's side of the draw than Fritzy did at the U.S. Open.
Enthusiastically. Fantastic
yes.
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You didn't watch the men, but boy, did you watch the women's side of the draw.
Great interviews and class.
Yes.
All the way through. For teenagers to handle themselves like that, very impressed.
Thank you, Todd. McLovin.
He still doesn't know you're making fun
no,
of him.
No, I know that. He doesn't.
I played along. I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
My best is going to be Elijah Mitchell Jr. III, rookie running back, San Francisco, proving anybody can run in a Kyle Shanahan offense, went for over 100 yards. My worst is going to be what everybody's talking about. Conor McGregor tries to fight Machine Gun Kelly at the VMAs last night because Machine Gun Kelly would not give him an autograph, apparently. I have no idea where this is going. I'm sensing some sort of Jake Paul, Logan Paul fight, but it was the big brouhaha.
Machine Gun Kelly's not fighting anybody.
Well, Conor McGregor called him out, said, let's go, because I guess he asked Machine Gun Kelly, who I think maybe his son is a fan of or something, for an autograph. Machine Gun Kelly shot him down. Conor McGregor threw a drink at him and went berserk. Or perhaps the whole thing is set up, but something's going on there.
No, yeah, but no. Machine Gun Kelly weighs less than his girlfriend, Megan Fox. I mean,
how much do you think Conor McGregor weighs?
Well, Conor McGregor's a professional fighter. I mean, Machine Gun Kelly? I mean, he's built like a corn stalk. Yes, Eden.
Yeah, he's like 6'4", 120. He's as thin as a rail. And then plus, it's kind of hard to be like, all right, you guys want a fist fight? When the Machine Gun Kelly's got like crystals glued all over his face and wearing a stunning amount of makeup, and you're like, yeah, all right, let's fight then.
I guess Machine Gun Kelly, who's an artist, by he's a musician, in case you're not aware of Machine Gun Kelly, and he's goes out with the actress Megan Fox. But I guess his security people were a little overly aggressive with Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor's walking around with a cane. He just had surgery a month ago. And doesn't he goes from 0 to 100? Couldn't there be somewhere in between where you just go, hey, we'd love to get a picture, and then the security guy pushes you, and you're like, easy, I just want to get a picture with him. Not, hey, come on, I'm gonna tear you apart.
That's pretty good.
Easy. Come on.
You're breaking this one down.
I get tired of Conor McGregor.
His immediate reaction is throw a drink.
Yeah. Wow, tough guy. You threw a drink at a guy who weighs 120 pounds. And he's there with his girlfriend, and he's got glitter on. Wow. Wow, tough guy. Man, I get bored by Conor McGregor. Like, I understood the whole, you know, whatever that world was when he was successful. And, you know, he hasn't been any good for a while. And he does stupid things. God. Do you have anything else?
That's all I got.
Okay. All right. Seton O'Connor, best and worst.
My worst of the weekend, and this is just punishing. It was absolutely crushing. It was like watching my own son get benched. Brock Purdy, Iowa State.
Oh, that was just not. That's your boy.
That was just not the day.
That's your boy.
Yeah, that was my guy. That was my guy. He still is. He still is my guy, but that was unfortunate for them.
What, McLovin?
He was your guy in 2015. How is he still playing college football?
Yeah, I know. I did have to ask Seton. I was like, is your guy still playing at Iowa State?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Yeah, Brocktober.
Yeah, Brocktober.
In September.
See, that's he's very much from the Bill Belichick school of thinking that this he uses September as like the preseason. Mm. Let's just see what we have here, and then he turns it on in October.
All right.
And then while I'm on a rant about quarterbacks, the proliferation of dual quarterbacks now where you're going with two.
Ooh.
All of a sudden, one guy's on, one guy's off, one guy's on, one guy's off. Not only it was already bad in college, but now it's going to the NFL. What are we doing? Maybe I just believe too much in the, like,
if you have two, you don't have one. Yeah.
What? All of a sudden, everybody's, Jacoby Brissett's in. No, now it's two, and then it's this guy, and then it's that guy. What? Every game was like that.
It's situational football, I think, is what that's called.
BS.
Paulie, best and worst of the weekend.
This is kind of a best and worst. My Toledo Rockets almost took down Notre Dame. They lost 32-29. An unbelievably great loss, but they had them. With about a minute and a half left, they had a touchdown. The running back could have taken a knee and kicked the field goal to win it, unfortunately. Great game by Toledo, though. And then player of the weekend, punters don't get enough credit. Torrey Taylor, the Iowa punter, he had 8 punts. He averaged 51 yards a punt. 5 of them were down inside the 5. Inside the 5, 5 of them. And he also had a 70-yard punt. Dominated Iowa State.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me start with the Rams and Matthew Stafford last night. Could it have gone any better for Matthew Stafford?
No, it was great to see him in a different uniform, surrounded by a ton of talent. Obviously a great coach on his sideline. And I think we'll continue to see him flourish as the season moves forward. And we see him to get more and more comfortable with those guys around him.
But you also have a quarterback who didn't have talent in Detroit. Like, how much can we put on Matthew Stafford with the failures of the Lions? Because we're going to give him a lot of credit with the Rams because he has talent, but the quarterback gets too much credit and too much blame.
True, but at the same time, I think the quarterback position is really it's so important to have the right organization surrounding you. There's been plenty of quarterbacks that have gone to the right place and had much better careers in the right place, the right organization, than them going to a bad organization like Detroit. I mean, Detroit's been struggling for a long time. You know, we've heard the stories, you know, inside and out from back in the days. And Stafford was there for 12 years. He gave it his best shot. He had some talent around him at times, but, you know, seeing him in LA with that kind of offense, that kind of system, and you know, there was a lot of talk about him not being able to play the game outside the pocket and do all the bootlegs and play action stuff that they did. But man, he looked good last night getting outside the pocket and throwing on the run.
But these rookie quarterbacks come in and they're ready to go. Or at least we think they are. But the mental part of this, though, Carson, I'm curious about, because you sat your first year behind John Kitna. But like physically, were you more ready than mentally, or maybe the other way around?
Well, these guys are coming into the league physically ready. I mean, these are, you know, look at Trey Lance in San Francisco. I mean, physically gifted, quick, fast, explosive arm, accurate. But it just takes some time. I mean, it just takes that, a couple seasons and getting used to being on third down, third and long, backed up in your own territory, in the red zone with the game on the line. There's so many things that you need as a quarterback to develop. And a majority of those things you need outside of having a great organization and a really good play caller is experience. And until these young guys have experience, and a bunch of plays and a bunch of different situations under their belt, they're not completely mentally ready. But these guys are coming into the league right now physically ready, without a doubt.
How overwhelmed did you feel first year starting?
Well, I had that first year to sit and rest, so I didn't feel overwhelmed. But had I played in that week one game my rookie year, I absolutely would have felt overwhelmed. I mean, there's so much you don't know about this game. And like I said, it just takes reps and it takes experience.
Yeah, I'm always curious about that. Then you have a bad game, and then it stays with – like the pros are able – the veterans can move on. Like you have to have a short memory, it feels like. But it feels like a rookie is going to hold on to that bad interception he had or a bad loss a little bit longer.
Absolutely. I mean, until you've proven yourself to your teammates that you can get over a bad loss, a bad play that lost a game, until you can prove that to your teammates and yourself, you don't know. I mean, if you can go to college like Kyler Murray did at Oklahoma and in 1 year go out there and play amazing and win a Heisman Trophy and almost a national championship. But until you do it at the NFL level, until you prove it to yourself, hey, I can go out in week one and lay an egg, and I can bounce back in week two and have 110 passer rating. You know, you don't know you can do it until you do it. And you're seeing some of these young guys struggle. I mean, you watched Trevor Lawrence play yesterday and it was a struggle, but that kid has the right mentality, the right makeup. I expect him to bounce back. It might not be in week two. It might not be in week three, but I would pretty much take any bet right now saying that Trevor Lawrence is not going to be a bust. He will be a successful NFL quarterback.
How do you explain Aaron Rodgers yesterday?
Man, this position, even when you're Aaron Rodgers, the position of quarterback is so difficult. When you put extra pressure on yourself, I mean, Aaron has asked for all the pressure, all the criticism you could possibly ever ask for. And it is so difficult. Even when you're as talented and gifted as Aaron, there's a lot of pressure on him to succeed. There's a lot of pressure on him to perform. It just goes to show you that even Aaron Rodgers can get rattled. He looked rattled from the jump. I mean, he looked like he was uncomfortable. He couldn't settle in and find his feet. He was harassed all day in the pocket. And that might be a little bit of this offseason catching up to him. There's no doubt in my mind Aaron will bounce back and have a Pro Bowl type caliber year. No doubt about it. But he looked extremely rattled yesterday.
How do you explain Patrick Mahomes to those who might not have witnessed Patrick Mahomes?
He's magic. There's a couple of guys in the league. They are just magicians. Russell Wilson jumps out at the top of my mind. He just does things that you don't expect him to be able to do. Patrick Mahomes, as much as we think he's great and he's got this big arm and he's Houdini, he just makes some plays that we didn't even think he could make. But there's just a handful of guys in this league right now that have magic about him, and he's one of them.
Talking to Carson Palmer, former NFL quarterback and, of course, Heisman Trophy winner. Are gloves performance enhancing?
Absolutely not.
For a wide receiver?
No. I mean, when I think of performance enhancing, I think like everybody else, you think of something you're injecting or ingesting in some form or another. But if putting on gloves is performance enhancing, then so are shoulder pads and helmets.
Well, but it helps you catch the ball.
Yeah, and a pair of shoulder pads help you tackle somebody.
Yeah, but a previous generation didn't have this.
Well, the previous generation didn't have the technology in their helmets and their shoulder pads that we have today.
How much does that help having that technology in your helmet when you have somebody who can calm you down, whisper to you while you're getting ready to call your play or getting up to the line of scrimmage?
Well, you don't have that much time to have a shrink jump on your headset and calm you down and talk. You only got 25 seconds. You got to get the play in, you got to relay the play and then get the snap off. But, I do think, that technology is great because especially as I got older in the league, I was way too fat and out of shape to run from the huddle to the sideline and back and forth in between every play, getting the play. So I needed that break to stand in the huddle and hear it through my headset.
Do you need to be in shape to be a quarterback?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unlike pitchers, I've always heard people say that pitchers have to be in great, great shape to be a pitcher. I think you got to be in even better shape to play quarterback in the NFL.
Did you not lift? Did you not run? Like, what happened that you got fat?
I got old. I shouldn't have said fat. I just got old and I got tired, and all those hits start adding up, having to go back and forth and shuttle plays in and out. When I was 20, 22, 23 would have been a lot easier than when I was 38. So thankfully when I was in my late 30s, I had that headset on.
You ever call a timeout because you're too tired?
Absolutely. I got to the bottom of a scrum, and it was a fumbled snap, and I had gotten back down on top of it. Everybody was laying on top of me, and I was playing for Bruce Arians in Arizona, and I was holding on to the ball so tightly, and somebody from the opposing team was trying to rip it out of my hands that my hand went numb, and I was worried that the next play was going to be a pass. And sure enough, Bruce called a pass. And the feeling hadn't come back in my hands yet because it was so fatigued for holding onto a ball and trying to maintain possession at the bottom of a pile. I had to call a timeout.
What's it like having Arians talk to you?
It's great. I mean, you look at Tampa Bay play now, and Brady doesn't have to deal with Arians MFing him in the huddle and over the headset because he's got Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator, calling the plays.
Wait, but Arians is MFing you while he's your offensive
all game long, me or the ref or somebody on the opposing team, you know, he would hit that button on his recorder and half of what he said was the play. The other half was him MF and the ref, or maybe me from the previous play or somebody on the other sideline. But now that, you know, he can just, you know, coach the game and handle everything from the 40,000 foot level. And Byron Leftwich is calling plays. He seems like his blood pressure's dropped. And he just seems like he's in a happier place.
But how does that – I mean, Brady wanted to play with Bruce Arians. Do you understand why he would?
100%. I mean, any pocket passer would absolutely love that system. There's a ton – you watched Brady play the other night on Thursday. They're in empty, it seems like, a quarter of the game. They're just spreading people out. They're getting their best receivers on the field. And they're letting Tom Brady do what he does best, which is take his time and take his checkdowns, you know, take the completions and throw the big plays when they show up.
But what's he do better than you?
Brady?
Yeah.
Everything.
No, he doesn't do everything better than you.
He does September 13th, 2021. But, you know, I think the one thing you watched that last drive they had where they went down the field. And the one thing Brady does in 2-minute drills is he knows defenses are scared of him. And he takes and lets the defense get a ton of depth and create cushion. I mean, you watch that last drive where they went down and kicked the field goal. He didn't throw a ball over 10 yards. He just was dinking and dunking it. And the defense was backpedaling and getting depth and giving them cushion. And he was just throwing the ball to the running backs and the tight ends, and they would step out of bounds after an 8-yard gain. And it's the same thing we've seen Brady do in New England for years. He doesn't get rattled. He doesn't take chances and try to force the ball downfield. He takes what the defense gives him, and they end up with a seemingly easy drive at the end of the game for a field goal and a win.
Is Brady, what, 4 years older than you?
Brady is 3 years older than me. He's 44. I'm 41. It blows my mind saying that. It's crazy.
How long would it take for you to get ready to play in a game?
Oh, I mean, I could walk out and play in a game, but just as quickly as I walked in, I'd be walking off the field with a hamstring or a busted Achilles or a shoulder or something. I'm in no form to play right now.
Who was the toughest quarterback you faced?
Well, I never beat Brady. I was up. I played against Brady a bunch. I was up 21-0 in the first half in New England, and Richard Seymour took a low shot on me and almost blew my knee out. And I didn't end up finishing the game, but we were up 21-0. So I beat Brady for a half. That's my best game. I beat Brady for a half of a game.
But do you say this to your kids? Like, do you say, you know, dad owned Brady for one half?
I was driving home. I coached my kids' seventh grade football team, and I was driving home, half the kids that live up by us, and I was dropping them off, and we're driving along, and one of the kids in the back seat told me that his second uncle, which I don't even know what a second uncle is, his second uncle tackled Tom Brady in college one time. And it really just made me made me realize how little these kids think of me. I'm their coach. They care less that I played in the NFL. they're all out there in Russell Wilson jerseys and Seattle Seahawks gear, and they talk about Brady all the time. It drives me nuts.
They do know you played in the NFL for 15 years.
Yeah, but it's just like, it was just such a blip on their radar. They couldn't wait to talk about Russell Wilson and letting Russ cook and Tom Brady. I don't even think they really realized or registered to him.
How's your USC Trojans?
That was a tough one. You know, it's to see the stadium half full, to see it, you know, us being 17-point favorites and really get blown. I mean, it really wasn't a close game. We were total. I mean, there were so many penalties and such a lack of discipline. It's really, really frustrating to watch those guys play this last weekend. But the good thing is it's week two. We've got a lot of football left.
Did you you lost to Stanford on a last second play, didn't you?
That was a long time ago, Dan. I did. That's right. I lost to Chris Lewis. They threw a smash concept and they hit the corner at the end of the game for a touchdown on the last second. That's right. Good memory.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring up positives here. I'm sorry. It feels like I'm bringing up negatives. But you own Tom Brady for one half.
21-0.
Yeah. Yeah. You always have that over him.
Yeah. I'm sure he remembers that too.
Hey, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, bud.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Carson Palmer. Brought to you by CBD, Level Select CBD. Provides target relief and helps treat everyday discomfort when you need it the most. This is great. It's a great product. LevelSelectCBD.com, promo code DP30. $30 off your entire order today. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, and South Dakota. Yeah, I don't know why it just kind of dawned on me. USC just lost to Stanford, and then didn't you lose to Stanford on a last second play? Yeah. Whoops. Sorry about that. Note to self, have some positive things to say when you have a guest on. Yes. Can you imagine you're the quarterback and Bruce Arians is calling in the plays and he's MFing you or somebody else? But, you know, Brady doesn't have to worry about that because Bruce Arians isn't in his helmet. Yes, Paul.
Carson Palmer played like 15 years in the pros, went to USC. Yeah. He can't even bring like the Heisman Trophy to practice to show the kids because we have it.
I know.
Like if he wanted to show it to the kids, hey, Tom Brady doesn't have one of these. Russell Wilson doesn't have one of these.
I don't know if the kids would care.
A Heisman?
I don't know. I don't know if the kids know if they're that young. I don't think they care about a Heisman. Yes, McLovin.
I can't believe he's 3 years younger than Tom Brady.
I know.
He had a full career.
I know. Wild. Tyler in New Jersey. Hi, Tyler. Welcome to the program. Best and worst of the weekend.
6'1", 180. There we go. So my worst of the weekend is having a seizure at work. My best of the weekend is watching my Seattle Seahawks win this weekend.
Wait, what happened to you at work?
I had a seizure. I'm an EMT, so is that the perfect place to have a seizure, you know?
Got
a bunch of EMTs and paramedics watching me, you know. It's great.
Okay. You might be the first person who's called whose best and worst of the weekend had to do with a seizure.
I'll take it.
Well, we're glad you're still with us there, Tyler. Thank you. I thought he said he had a seizure, like he was having a Caesar salad. I'm going, all right.
A bad Caesar salad can ruin your day.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt
like
about
when
that.
Somebody says, what's the worst thing that happened to you this weekend? I had a Caesar.
Yeah.
That Caesar salad.
Bad Caesar salad.
You know, they just can't get good croutons, man.
Yeah.
You know, can't get good croutons. Let's take a break. Last call for phone calls. What we learn, what's in store tomorrow. Did you guys hear, did you think he said seizure?
He was blasé about it. Like, yeah, I had a seizure at work and then went home.
Yeah. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, he's like, go Hawks. It's like I came out on top at the end of the weekend.
Yeah.